Sudan further. So not just South Sudan, but having Darfur, there might be a rebel movement that appears in the east that used to appear in order to bomb the pipelines or the like. The reality is that the Americans will say either Sudan falls in line with the ideological changes that we want, or we are happy to support the breakup of Sudan, as we're seeing today, given the fighting has spread towards Darfur, and given that the U.S. approach is not to support the army against Hemeti's coup, but to push for a mediation that keeps Hemeti's army or Hemeti's militia outside the control of the state, so that Hemeti can be used later to squeeze the army instead.
The Israeli apartheid regime has offered to play what it claims is a mediator role between the two clashing sides in Sudan. This is while the Sudanese people have expressed their total rejection of any normalization of ties with the Israeli regime.
هذه الوقفة الاحتجاجية هي وقفة منددة للتطورات الأخيرة في لقاء يعني وزير الخارجية الإسرائيلي للبرهان، وده بالنسبة لنا يعني هو لقاء فوقي. الوقفة الاحتجاجية دي هي وقفة منددة، وقفة رافضة لهذا اللقاء ورافضة للتطبيع مع الكيان الصهيوني بأي مستوى من المستويات. ويعني زايد نصرة القضية الفلسطينية بالنسبة لنا هي أولوية طبعا.
Now, Mr. Mbaluto, what is the real reason behind this proposal by the Israeli regime that it wants to mediate between the warring parties in Sudan while the Sudanese people have come out to vehemently oppose ties with the USAPA Israeli regime?
No, when you see Israel proposing, I wouldn't rule out that Israel is trying to, or rather U.S., is what we see Israel doing is doing as a proxy of the U.S. No one can rule out that either, because we see most of the time in international setting, we've seen Israel also being a partner or being an ally of the U.S. We have seen that ongoing for a long time. So we cannot rule out that Israel efforts are not U.S. efforts. But again, now does that look like you're making that proposal on the ground with other very powerful interests from Russia, from these other Arabic countries, pretty much mocking situation. So our hope now probably may rest on Africa unity, may rest on IGAD group of countries, because then those ones are seen as neutral. And when they are seen as neutral, they can actually be the ones to broker peace.
The United Nations Special Representative in Sudan said that both sides have nominated representatives for peace talks. He's also called for a permanent end to the conflict and issued the following warning.
Regional countries and the international community must say that if the situation continues, even if one side wins the fight, that side would not be accepted internationally. If a side refuses negotiations and refuses reconciliation, it will not be accepted internationally, regionally, and I think also nationally in Sudan.
The African Union's Peace and Security Council warned against external interference in the current crisis in Sudan and demanded that the warring parties swiftly embrace a peaceful solution and inclusive dialogue. What's your take on this statement?
It's not really forceful. It doesn't come with the force that I want to see. I think from where I stand, it has come time for Africa Union. Number one, to have stand by force, military capable stand by force. I know they have AMISOM, but the funding of AMISOM has been a challenge in the past. If it was to be funded by the same countries that keep on trying to control Africa, it just doesn't have the strength that is required. So what I would have loved in ideal situation would be immediately the war kicked off in Sudan between these two generals. I would have loved to see Africa or AMISOM powerful, ready to intervene and intervening in Sudan, militarily building that buffer zone so that the two forces are not able to continue to fight.
There have been several mediation proposals by trans-regional powers aimed at ending the conflict in Sudan. Many in Africa expect the African Union to lead efforts aimed at bringing together the warring parties in Sudan within the framework of African solutions to African problems. However, this continental body is yet to take decisive mediation measures.
I think that one of the things that's very important to note is that from the perspective of the African Union, what they're seeing and what they are concerned about is the emergence of militias outside the control of the state. And one of the reasons the African Union is not keen on mediation between Hemeti and between Burhan is because they believe that this mediation will recognize Hemeti's militia outside the control of the state. And that has deep ramifications for countries such as Somalia, countries such as Eritrea, other countries where we are seeing a buildup of militias being supported internationally that are beginning to operate outside the control of the state. For the African Union, they believe that the Sudanese army must be protected. As an institution, its authority must be protected. And that's why we've seen that Washington prefers to host a mediation in Riyadh or host a mediation with the power that want to help Hemeti stay outside the control of the state and doesn't want to go with the African Union mediation that insists that Hemeti should hand over power to the Sudanese army. And this is why I think that the African Union has the correct approach to preserve the integrity of the state. But Washington is not interested in that. Washington wants to go for an option that preserves Hemeti's independence outside the army. Because for Washington, if Burhan wins, if the Sudanese army win, then they will continue to resist the ideological changes that Washington is trying to impose in Sudan.
United Nations has warned that the humanitarian crisis in the country was turning into a full-blown catastrophe and that the risk of spillover into neighboring countries was worrisome. The UN Secretary General said the violence must stop.
The violence must stop. It risks a catastrophic conflagration within Sudan that could engulf the whole region and beyond. I strongly condemn the indiscriminate bombardment of civilian areas, including healthcare facilities. And I call on the parties to stop combat operations in densely populated areas and to allow unhindered humanitarian aid operations. Civilians must be able to access food, water, and other essential supplies and evacuate from combat zones.
Sudan's former Prime Minister Abdel Hamdok has also warned that the clashes in his country could deteriorate into one of the worst civil wars than those experienced in Syria and Libya if the fighting is not stopped. Speaking in Nairobi recently during a governance forum, Hamdok said that transitions have their own ups and downs.
Transitions, by their nature, they are nonlinear. They never travel in a straight line. They have their ups and downs. It was our unity that toppled the dictatorship. And we should not lose track on that.
Yeah.
We should have been staying the course as a unified front. And I was telling them time and again that to protect the transition, we need to stay unified.
Now, the military conflict in Sudan has derailed a plan for a transition to a civilian government 4 years after the fall of Omar al-Bashir and 2 years after a military coup. Now, briefly, what will be the fate of Sudan in the near future and distant future?
And I think that now what we're seeing is that Burhan is between two choices. Either he joins this mediation process and essentially builds this transition period, which is built on denying the Sudanese to vote, or he wins the fight against Hemeti and uses that as leverage to begin a genuine democratic process because he believes that the U.S. will no longer support him. And therefore, to rescue himself, he has to go to elections. It's not that Burhan is democratic. It's not that Burhan likes elections. It's not that Burhan wants to host a democratic transition. It's more that Burhan believes that his survival is more likely in a democratic transition if he's forced to hand over power than it is under a transition period in which they are trying to hand over power to unelected civilian parties. So I think in terms of the fate of Sudan, it depends on whether Burhan wins his fight against Hemeti or goes to mediation and we go back to square one, a transition process that prevents any elections and prevents the Sudanese from choosing their leaders.
Well, the situation in Sudan is still unfolding, and here at Africa Today, we shall keep you posted on what is going on. I'd like to thank our guests today, Sami Hamdi, the International Interest Editor-in-Chief, and Julius Mpaluto, our political analyst, for their incisive analysis. And that wraps it up for this week's edition of Africa Today. Goodbye for now. We'll be right back.
option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Many nations are looking for alternatives to U.S. dollar to reduce their dependence on the United States. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Tasnim News Agency wrote in this regard, Russia's economy has always been independent from the credit sources of the World Bank, the executive director of the Bank for Russia and Syria Affairs said, adding that Russia's ruble could replace U.S. dollar in international areas. Roman Marshavin, in an interview with the Sputnik News Agency, recently stated that Russia has not relied on World Bank loans for a long time. Russia's economy has always been independent from the credit sources of the World Bank. He reiterated and added that Russia acts as a presenter of science and knowledge in this regard. It is a fact that the World Bank will return to full interaction with Russia in time, he added. In case of accurate implementation of the financial policies, Russia's ruble could replace U.S. dollar, the executive director of the World Bank emphasized. Meanwhile, Global Times noted energy trading between China and Russia has been settled in both the yuan and the ruble. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said in interview with Russian media over the weekend, according to a report by China's state broadcaster CCTV. Trades using the yuan, the ruble, and the Turkish lira are increasing and becoming common, while deals using the U.S. dollar or the euro are trending down, Novak said. Moscow intends to abandon the use of the U.S. dollar and the euro in energy transactions while using the local currencies of relevant countries, Novak said. The promotion of energy settlements in their own currencies will facilitate China-Russia trade as energy remains a major stabilizer in bilateral ties. Ling Bokyong, director of the China Center for Energy Economics Research at Xiamen University, told the Global Times recently. According to Global Times, China's commerce with Russia maintained its strong growth momentum in the first quarter of 2023. Bilateral trade totaled $53.85 billion, up 38.7% from a year earlier, far outpacing the growth of China's total foreign trade. Data from China's General Administration of Customs showed. China and Russia have moved to strengthen their energy and financial cooperation and made solid progress in strategic projects. In September, Russian energy giant Gazprom said that it had signed an agreement to start switching payments for gas supplies to China to the yuan and the ruble instead of US dollar. Reuters reported Gazprom CEO Alexei Miller said that the new payment mechanism is a mutually beneficial, timely, reliable, and practical decision and will make settlements easier, serve as a great example to other companies, and give a new impetus to our economies, read a statement on the website of Gazprom. Lin said China-Russia energy cooperation has great potential as complementary is strong between the two countries. China purchased more than 86.25 million tons of crude oil from Russia in 2022, up 8% from a year earlier, Chinese ambassador to Russia, Zhang Hanhui, said in an interview with Sputnik News Agency in March. Zhang pointed out that China's energy market has huge growth potential. With the rapid recovery of China's economy this year, growth in investment and consumption will mean a stronger demand for energy. According to Press TV, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has admitted that economic sanctions used against countries by the United States put the dollar's dominance at risk. As the United States has continued to weaponize the dollar, countries are seeking alternatives, from creating new common currencies to using local currencies. Nations are trying to find a safe and equitable way to trade instead of being at the whims of a hegemony that can decide overnight to confiscate a country's money or cut it off from the international financial system. Russia launched its de-dollarization policy when the West slapped economic sanctions against the country. After Russia launched its special operation in eastern Ukraine in February 2022, the U.S. led a massive wave of financial sanctions against Moscow. The biggest moves were the decision by the West to freeze nearly half of Russia's foreign currency reserves, and also the removal of major Russian banks from SWIFT, an interbank messaging service that facilitates international payments. The backdrop of the sanctions introduced by Western governments against Russia, a major global energy producer and exporter, prompted China to decide to ditch the dollar in international trade. Bank of Russia records show that the Chinese yuan has become a major player in Russian foreign trade. India, a major importer of Russian energy, has also taken several steps towards shifting away from the greenback to rubles and rupees in mutual trade with Moscow.
If you agree with me that travel is most rewarding when it surprises, then Iran might just be the most rewarding destination on Earth. By having lush, dense forests in the north, warm, sunny beaches in the south by the Persian Gulf, snowy mountains in the west, and amazingly hot deserts in the east, Iran is one of the few countries that gives the joy of experiencing four different seasons at the same time to travelers. With an area of 1.6 million square kilometers, Iran is the 18th largest country in the world and the second largest in the Middle East. Its area roughly equals the area of France, Spain, and Germany together. Iran's diverse and striking landscapes offer a wealth of breathtaking and spectacular views to discover. This week on Aperture's Iran Trotter series, Jawad Gharayi will go to Bahu Kalat in the south of Iran, where the turquoise waters meet the hot sand of the desert. Here's the first part.
The living world is filled with unparalleled beauties. Beauties represented by Mother Nature across this beautiful planet. A planet that's been the only habitat for humans since they came into being millions of years ago. The beauties of nature have forever captivated humans everywhere. Many of what humans have created over millennia were inspired by their natural environment. To many humans, the word nature conjures up images of mountains and forests, but nature has thousands of other beautiful facets, and some of those facets manifest themselves in sharp contrast to each other. One of the most beautiful faces of Mother Nature is the barren areas of land, or deserts. Many nature explorers believe that deserts and steppes are the most beautiful parts of nature, and the most beautiful parts of these parts are the sand dunes and hills. But is there anywhere in the world with expanses of shifting dry sand dunes right next to a great body of salt water named the sea? Hi, I'm Jawad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm taking you on a journey to the most pristine areas of this beautiful land. Chile is a beautiful country with unique natural exquisiteness. A country that remarkably has vast steppes and shifting sand dunes along the coast of the Pacific Ocean, offering a natural scene of unparalleled beauty. Of course, I haven't traveled to Chile's beautiful Pacific coast. My destination is the Bahu Kalat rural district in the south of Iran's Sistan and Baluchistan province. But I'm not going straight to Bahu Kalat. I begin my trip near the border between Hormozgan and Sistan and Baluchistan provinces. There are few places in the world where sand dunes meet the sea, creating a spectacular landscape. Such coastal deserts can only be seen in parts of Chile, in the Great African Sahara, and in the Southwest African country of Namibia. Some may find it hard to believe, but in addition to those few places in the world, there is an area in southern Iran where expansive sand fields meet the Sea of Oman. A place near the village of Darak in Zaravan County. The border between Sistan and Balochistan and Hormozgan provinces, in the southernmost area of Balochistan on the coast of the Sea of Oman. In the past, this area of Iran was called Mukran, a name researchers say was derived from the word muk, meaning the palm tree. Given its large number of palm groves, Balochistan can be referred to as the land of palm groves in Iran, an area with a beautiful history and peerless natural splendor. Unfortunately, the general public in Iran doesn't know much about Balochistan. The sea, the sand dunes, and the Martian mountains, all in one place, provide an environment with no parallel in Iran and, I dare say, in the world. But the sand dunes, the Martian mountains, and the Sea of Oman aren't the only things that make this area of Balochistan unique. It's the multitudes of palm and other trees scattered along this area, as well as the many herds of camels, goats, and sheep grazing among these dunes and mountains that make for breathtaking beauty. Here, Mother Nature has made all her efforts to create some of the most beautiful coastal sceneries in the world, and she's done a great job. This is the result of millions of years of work for Mother Nature. So it's incumbent upon us and the authorities to keep these unmatched beauties just as they are, by not allowing any structures, however small, to be built here or in the surrounding area. Not even a few gazebos for tourists and explorers to use. We have to preserve this natural magnificence as it is. A geopark is a unified area that advances the protection and use of geological heritage in a sustainable way and promotes the economic well-being of the people who live in it. Geoparks are protected areas, both geomorphologically rich and boast unique wildlife, history, culture, and indigenous populations. Countries with such wealth are few and far between. But this area of Balochistan is home to several morphological splendors. It's also inhabited by Baluch tribes of a rich culture. Their traditional lifestyle and time-honored customs, a pure, unspoiled natural environment, the preserved remains from the remote past, the golden sandy coastlines, and the deep turquoise blue waters of the Sea of Oman. The traditional fishing apparatus on boats moored at a beautiful port, and finally, very good vegetation and animal life. As I walk on beautiful sand hills, I think to myself, how are we responsible to the generations that will come into being in this country, to the natural beauties in our country? I'm spending today relishing the stunning untapped natural beauties in Zaravan and snap several beautiful pictures. The nagging question is, do we have the right to deny the children of tomorrow the opportunity to feast their eyes on such spectacular scenery? I wish no structure, no roads, nothing would be built among these ancient mountains, sand dunes, and palm groves. No hotels, no themed amusement parks to be built for human recreation on its untouched coastline. Even a few simple gazebos in the area can accelerate the destruction of this region's ecology and natural landscape. I wish all of us humans had more appreciation for the natural world, this manifestation of God Almighty's beauty, and paid it due respect. I wish all nature-loving tourists would choose to walk into the heart of nature, and by doing so prevented any harm to it. A lot of people in the world think that if they really want to enjoy their expedition into nature, they have to spend the night in multi-star hotels near their destinations. But that's not the right mentality. It's not in anyone's interests. Hotels that are built close to natural habitats do nothing but damage an intricate ecology that's taken millennia to be formed. There's an alternative way for explorers to both enjoy their trips into the heart of nature and for the natural world to be spared damage by humans. In other words, for humans to forge a partnership with the natural world. Local homes, kapars, and black tents, and also camping tents are the best options. All the people and officials in this area of Balochistan say they hope that in the near future, the area they live in will be registered as an important and valuable geopark by the relevant authorities living in the capital city. And by doing so, they hope the unique natural environment here and the culture and customs of the old Baloch tribes inhabiting this region will be preserved and protected. I take great pleasure walking about in this beautiful natural landscape and accompanying camel herders, but this is the end of this leg of my journey. I have to set off for my main destination, the Bahu Kalat district in the north of Balochistan. The main purpose of this trip is to visit an idyllic little village by the name of Shir Gawaz, a lush, vast, green patch of land 30 kilometers to the border with Pakistan. The name Shir Gawaz was derived from the names of two wild animals, namely the lion and the boar. The locals here tell me this area is home to wild boars, but no one has ever sighted any trace of lions here or anywhere in Iran, unless in the very distant past. Perhaps what ancient Shir Gawaz inhabitants meant by the word lion was in fact the wolf or hyena. That's because those two species have lived in this region for hundreds of years. But what has brought me to this area of Balochistan wasn't the lion or the boar. I've come here to see the Asian crocodile. Parlance, this rare species of crocodile is called the Gondo. They live somewhere between River Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gawaz. The river is the biggest natural stream of water in Balochistan. It is known by different names by the locals living in villages located along its 300-kilometer course. Monikers such as Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gawaz. My team and I have to walk a long distance to see one of those short-nosed crocodiles. But these gorgeous, thick-skinned aquatic reptiles in Iran are said to be very shy animals, making it difficult for us to find one. What that means is you can't get too close to these amphibians and admire their beauty at close range. We have been going about gunning for a crocodile for a couple of hours now, but we haven't been able to see even one just yet. As I say, they are very shy animals. The locals tell me I'd be lucky to see one, though they also say if you wait long enough, you'll definitely be able to see at least one. Guy is around 3 meters long. The people in this area call them the gondo. Who would have thought that you could see gondos, the short-nosed Asian crocodiles, in a river in Iran's Sistan and Balochistan province? At their biggest, these majestic reptiles are 3.5 meters long. The primary habitats of the short-nosed Asian crocodile are in Iran, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar. The people of Shir Gwaz tell me the best place to see the gondos is the Shir Gwaz Dam, a barrier built across the Shir Gwaz River to impound its water. The number of crocodiles living in Iran has been estimated at between 300 and 400. The good news is the people of Sistan and Balochistan do not do anything to endanger the survival of these adorable reptiles. The bond between them is unshakable. In general, the Baluch are kind, nature-loving human beings, traits that are rooted in these noble people's culture and creed. The love of nature and of animals is part of the life and culture of the Baluch people. Animals are part of the family, among them wild animals. Probably if this were another city or country, many people would try and, man, this guy is strong. I bet if I let him go, he's definitely gonna break my bones or break my camera into pieces. As I was saying, if this mountain goat were anywhere other than here, without a doubt some heartless poacher would have gunned it down by now. But the people here love animals dearly. The gondos that we saw earlier, they're conserving them so well. Also this wild goat, that's very close to the hearts of the people here. You can see many peacocks, partridges, and pheasants in the households here in Shir Gwaz, and also in other villages elsewhere in Balochistan. The Shir Gwaz River flows past Bahu Kalad village, providing the hard-working community here with water for their farms, fruit groves, and animals. Perhaps there are many people in Iran who are unaware that the fruits grown in Balochistan can only be farmed in tropical climates. But that's exactly what's happening in this province. All of the Iranian banana produce comes from this region. Bahu Kalad is also among the important producers of watermelons in Iran. The cold season is when the watermelons grown here are harvested and distributed across the country. I've just stepped into a fruit grove in Bahu Kalad. In my opinion, this is a veritable piece of heaven. Here, you can see several different species of fruits right next to each other. Something you may not be able to see anywhere else in Iran. Fruits such as bananas, dates, mangoes, papaya, all kinds of citrus fruits. I've also been told that even coffee is farmed in some of the gardens here. It's just wonderful. I mean, you could go so far as calling this place Little India, located in southwestern Iran.
choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the Limelight.
More Americans died of gun-related injuries in 2021 than in any other year on record, according to the latest available statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. That included record numbers of both gun murders and gun suicides. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Recent international growth in this regard, Texas is setting a new record for mass killings. A day after a gunman killed 8 people and injured 7 others north of Dallas, Texas, the driver of a Land Rover drove into a group of migrants waiting at a bus stop, killing 8 on Sunday, May 7th. 10 people were injured. The attack occurred in Brownsville, Texas, near the border with Mexico. The driver of the Land Rover, identified as George Alvarez, was initially charged with reckless driving, according to police. Also on Monday, May 8th morning, the police charged him with 8 counts of manslaughter. The police said they had not yet determined whether the act was intentional. Alvarez had a record that included prior charges of assault and driving while intoxicated, according to police. After the Brownsville killing, he tried to flee the scene, but witnesses held him until the police arrived. Police Chief Felix Sousa said at a news conference that the department was waiting results of former toxicology tests. Alvarez was not cooperating, the police said. In the mall shooting in Allen, Texas, the alleged gunman died after a confrontation with police at the Allen Premium Outlets, the scene of the shooting, Allen Police Department officials said on Saturday, May 6th. The hospitalized victims' ages ranges from 5 to 61 years old, authorities said. There was a surreal scene after the shooting. Shoppers at the Allen Premium Outlets were ordered to come out with their hands in the air, presumably to ensure nobody was carrying a weapon or was an accomplice in the shooting. After the latest massacre in Dallas, there was a string of vacuous statements from American officials. President Joe Biden called on Congress to pass an assault weapons ban following the Texas mall mass shooting. Yesterday, an assailant in tactical gear armed with an AR-15-style assault weapon gunned down innocent people in a shopping mall. And not for the first time. Such an attack is too shocking to be so familiar, Biden said in a statement released on Sunday, May 7th, adding, "And yet, American communities have suffered roughly 200 mass shootings already this year. According to leading counts, more than 14,000 of our fellow citizens have lost their lives," credible estimates show. The leading cause of death for American kids is gun violence. Vice President Kamala Harris intoned in equally somber tone, saying, "All Americans deserve to be safe from gun violence. She also urged Congress to act. She said in a statement, "Doc and I mourn for the 8 adults and children who lost their lives, pray for those wounded, and send our gratitude to the first responders who ran toward danger. All Americans deserve to be safe from gun violence, but they are not," Harris continued. "Not because we do not know the solutions. Not because the American people are divided on this issue. Even a majority of gun owners support sensible reforms," Harris added. "We need action." Despite such pleas, why is there no let-up in gun violence in the United States of America? In 2021, there were 48,830 deaths from gun-related injuries, according to the latest data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. That's nearly an 8% increase from 2020, which was a record-breaking year for firearm deaths. In Mexico, by comparison, there were 22,116 gun-related deaths in the year 2019. Data shows more than 50 people are killed each day by a firearm in the U.S., according to the CDC. That's a significantly larger portion of homicides than in the case in neighboring Canada at 37%. Why is gun-related violence so prevalent in the United States? Some people say that it is the number of guns in private hands in the U.S., estimated at 390 million in 2018, according to the Swiss-based research project, the Small Arms Survey. The U.S. ratio of 120.5 firearms per 100 residents, up from 88 per 100 in 2011, far surpasses that of other countries around the world. So one must look elsewhere to seek answers to the very high rate of gun-related killings in the U.S. Violence is glorified in American culture. It is projected on television as well as in video games. When Americans murder millions of innocent people abroad in the endless wars of aggression, it is applauded at home. In the U.S., the police shoot first and ask questions later, if at all. It is said that violence is as American as apple pie. When the culture of violence is glorified in America, it is not surprising that people would resort to it at the first opportunity. School mass shootings have escalated. Nowhere else in the world are children murdered in such high numbers as in the U.S. Welcome to the land of the freaks.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world. The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18th, 2023. The subject of freedom is one of the foundations in understanding that has been spoken about in Islam. The subject of justice is one of the most important issues in understanding. These matters need to be solved. Our young university students should think about these things They need to work on them until they attain depth. You need to read books, read the Nahjul Balagha, ponder over the verses of the Qur'an when it is recited. Now, consider justice as an example. Of course, an important example of justice is the elimination of economic and social inequalities, and the like. But this is not the only thing. It is one of its major features. Justice begins from our personal judgments. Justice begins with our personal actions, our words, and our judgments about other people and about work. The Holy Quran says, "And ill feeling for a people should never lead you to be unfair. Be fair." The Holy Quran, Surah 5, verse 8.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Even if we disagree with someone, if we feel an enmity towards them, or if we don't think in the same manner, we should not be cruel towards them. The most tragic thing that can happen is if an unbeliever grabs me by the collar on Judgment Day, saying, "Sir, you oppressed me in such and such a place." There really is nothing more difficult than that. Or if one of God's enemies has a right on me and they grab me by the collar on Judgment Day, telling me that I have wronged them. Justice is like this. About international justice, this fight against the arrogant powers, which I keep repeating, is one of the most important examples of justice. Some people seek justice, but they don't believe that the fight against the arrogant powers, the US and Zionism, are also examples of seeking justice. But they are. This is how it is. Freedom. Freedom is very important. The most important part of the theory of freedom in Islam is freedom from this framework of matter. The materialistic viewpoint says that you were born one day, you will live for a few years, and then you will stop existing. We are all doomed to perish. They will give you some types of freedom in this material cage, such as the freedom of lust, the freedom of anger, and freedom for oppression, all kinds of freedom. But that is not freedom.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you. Things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Pakistan's Supreme Court has ruled that the arrest of the former Prime Minister Imran Khan was illegal, ordering his immediate release and asking the government to ensure his security. The court also urged the ex-premier to condemn the violent protests and emphasized that court's primary responsibility is to protect the citizens of the country. The country's top judge in his short verdict said that Khan would be kept in the police headquarters till his next appearance before the High Court on Friday over safety concerns. Khan was arrested by Pakistan's security forces on Tuesday over corruption allegations. The ruling Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz has criticized the country's Supreme Court for setting Imran Khan free, calling him a criminal.
The Supreme Court has double standards toward the government and Imran Khan. It has ruled that Khan, who is accused of corruption, should be provided with all facilities and be able to meet people freely. It would send a message that the courts are willing to compromise on justice. My only question is why the court has double standard.
The angry supporters of Imran Khan welcomed the Supreme Court decision, saying the release of their leader actually upholds the rule of law in the country.
Supreme Court of Pakistan ka shukr ada.
We are thankful to the Supreme Court for releasing Imran Khan from illegal detention by the government. The recent verdict of the top court will be considered as the supremacy of the rule of law in the country, which was violated by the current regime.
After being released by the court, the former PM expressed his grievances about his arrest, stating that he was abducted illegally and tortured during custody. Khan urged followers of his party to end their protests and refrain from damaging public and private property. Pakistan remains in the grip of deadly violence and protests after the arrest of the ex-premier.
Although the former Pakistani premier can now breathe a sigh of relief following the top court's decision, experts believe that Imran Khan has to prepare himself for more political challenges in coming days. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The fourth Tehran International Book Fair has opened in the Iranian capital. Some 2,700 domestic publishers and 100 foreign publishers from over 40 countries have attended this fair this year. The motto of this year's book fair is "The future is worth reading." The international section of the fair aims to introduce the capacities of the publishing industry.